So I was wondering if you had a direct comment on sort of on the most recent move that Google made to acquire ITA in terms of travel information and how that compares to their previous attempt to merge their advertising with Yahoo, which was disallowed.
Yeah, I'm not sure those are comparable moves, and I think that I think they're that the reasons come down to which market you're actually concerned about, right? So, in terms of the Yahoo ad partnership, the market in question was clearly the market for ad sales, and therefore the consumer would actually be the advertiser. And I think there was a legitimate concern of about one company having way too much power in this very important and growing segment of advertising. With the travel merger, I just don't see the same results or the same potential results there. I mean, talking about antitrust and Google is so foggy for a couple of reasons. One, it's really clear that what matters in antitrust under the Obama administration is significantly different from the status quo of the previous 8 years. Certain things matter more than used to, right? And it's too early to say whether it's sort of in concert with the attitude about antitrust during the Clinton years, but clearly we're at a time of an intellectual shift in what matters in antitrust after, essentially 30 years of to a large degree not taking antitrust seriously. But and this occurs at a moment when competition doesn't always mean what we think it means, and markets aren't obviously what we think they are, right? So in a lot of cases, I think Google looks like it's cornering the market in some areas, but not necessarily creating an antitrust problem, if that makes sense.
So if you were to characterize sort of the kernel of what antitrust means in an internet-based market, in an internet-based economy, what would you say that kernel was?
Yeah, I mean, right now I don't think a kernel exists, actually. I think it's all in flux and up for grabs. There is a very clear question about any firm's ability to set prices and keep prices high in online advertising. And I think that the Obama administration and regulators in Europe are very concerned about that particular market, and that's more classically an antitrust issue. But then you have you have a situation in which the theoretical arguments about antitrust, the theoretical arguments against vibrant antitrust, are very salient when discussing this company or any other software-based company, right? And what I mean by that is Google's standard line about any concerns about its power within a market is that at any moment someone can come up with a better search engine, right? So let's just say for the sake of argument that Bing is a better search engine. Well, what Google doesn't invite into that argument or into that conversation, which I think is one of the things that a more holistic view of antitrust must consider, is the extent to which a company takes advantage of its presence in our lives, all right? Presence in users' lives, and how much of a inertia there is there. What I mean by that is, let's assume that Bing is measurably superior to Google. I'm not convinced of that, but for the sake of argument, right? And let's say that Bing has managed to encroach on Google's share of total web searches in the United States. And just again, for the sake of rough numbers and rough estimates, let's say that a year ago, Google had 70% of the web searches in the United States occurring through its services. And today it has 68%. And that 2% went, that number went to Bing, right? So that goes to Google's argument that anybody can create a really great search engine and draw some market away. And if Google starts to create trouble, bully people, creates the impression that it is a bad partner in anything, then many more people can flee to Bing without hurting their experience online, right? Now, that argument only goes so far, because the marketing question is not our willingness to use one search engine or another. The question is about the placement of ads throughout the web. And that is really Google's market. But it also, that argument also ignores a couple of important facts. Number one, Google is not just code. There are actually very few successful tech companies today that are just code. The reason that Google can do what it does, the reason that Google's search engine is as fast as it is, that it learns as quickly as it does, all of the advantages that Google has in the market come, I would say, more from Google's scale and infrastructure than from its coding prowess. Its coding prowess is formidable, well-documented. Nonetheless, the fact that at a moment when bandwidth got really cheap and server space got really cheap, Google was in a position with a lot of cash to capitalize on that infrastructure and controls more server farms and more bandwidth than it needs for its immediate needs, and therefore the price of everything it does can be so much cheaper, the speed at which it operates can be so much faster. For a company to truly compete with Google in terms of its presence on the web and therefore its ability to place ads around the web, that company would have to have an infrastructure that would be comparable to Google. I would say at this point, Microsoft is the only viable competitor. In a distant third, Amazon, because of its server power and server space and its ability to, 5, 6, 7 years ago to leverage that that environment. That's really the only real competition here, unless you want to say Facebook, which isn't really competing in the open web, but is competing for our attention. So I don't think there is a kernel. I think that what's happening in antitrust reflects some of the more interesting questions happening out there in the world. And I think that the fact that Google is so active in so many markets and activities right now is creating a really fertile intellectual environment for antitrust right now. So I think there are a lot of people trying to think through these problems, a lot of folks working for the FTC, working for the Justice Department, trying to figure out what matters in these markets right now. I think that maybe in 5 years there will be a clear answer, there will be clear guidance. But I think right now, both inside companies and inside the federal government and in the academy that pays attention to antitrust, there are more questions than answers.
So you mentioned Facebook very briefly there, and I think what Facebook exists to do is to extract and store and metricize information about its users. Do you think in that sense, in sort of the data extraction sense, that Facebook could become a competitor for Google in the "I know more about my users than you" field?
Yeah, only instrumentally, right? So the instrumental notion there, the instrumental part of extracting data about users from users, is to be able to efficiently target ads to potential users. So Facebook is, by all measures, getting better at that, but also by all measures, nowhere near as successful as Google. Google's been making tremendous amounts of money for many, many years, and Facebook might have turned a corner in 2010. We don't actually know that in terms of revenue, or in terms of profit anyway. So, in that sense, they're competitors. I mean, one of the real questions I think that European regulators are probably going to confront sooner than in the United States is to what extent this information harvesting plays into competition. You know, to what extent the ability to control information and harvest information exclusively constitutes a trade practice that might, in fact, be unfair. So in the open web, I think Google has a very strong case, if this were to come up, to say that there's nothing that prevents any other company from harvesting information just as much as Google does. It's all about cookies. It's all about permission to register and log in to certain services during the process of using search. And so, there, you know, because Google is explicitly designed not to lock people in and not to lock data in, it has a pretty strong defense if that's the issue. Facebook, not so much. Facebook does not allow anybody else to scrape its data according to its user agreements. And I'm sure if anybody tried to make money from scraping Facebook data, that would be, you know, invite a tremendous lawsuit. So, you know, the very fact that Facebook set itself up to take advantage of a group, a very large group of people who consider themselves part of a comfortable closed community, is I think both Facebook's advantage, but ultimately, it could complicate questions if Facebook got to be as dominant in the advertising markets as Google is. And that's not likely to happen anytime soon, though.
Just one last sort of topic question. Do you have a comment on the current FIR over search neutrality?
Yeah. Well, so I think search neutrality has unfortunately been conflated with other uses of the word neutrality, right? So, you know, we see clever headlines and shallow analyses saying, well, you know, Google's defense of network neutrality is now coming back to bite it, as some are arguing for search neutrality. Now, there's a couple of things to remember about search neutrality. It is oxymoronic. One cannot have a neutral search engine. The very act of searching is the act of discrimination. Every search engine, every search service must have a set of criteria on which it discriminates, one source from another, one link from another. The question, I think, is more importantly one of transparency. Now, how much transparency can there be in search? That's, I think, a question we should start asking, and I'm not convinced we're going to get very far with it. For a company like Google to be forced into any level of transparency is to essentially give up the game, right? Give up the competitive advantage. And that's a big problem. At the same time, let's think about this in terms of, you know, Republican values. It's really important as search engines, especially Google, become our first stop in searching about the world, become the lens through which we see the world. It's increasingly important to remember that the biases of Google are baked into the algorithms, and we should have some sense of it. Google is so hard to read, but just by using it, so hard to reverse engineer just by using it, largely because, to the best of our knowledge, search is becoming increasingly customized to one's place and one's search record. So your search results and my search results are not necessarily going to look the same for the same search at the same time. In addition, my search results on Monday might not be the same as my search results on Friday because the web changes or because Google changes its algorithm, right? So demanding either neutrality, whatever that is, or transparency puts a tremendous burden on these companies. I'm not sure it's a totally unfair burden. I think what I would prefer to see is a debate about the extent to which it's even possible for us to have a general understanding of how search works. And I think we should consider experimenting with more and funding, therefore funding, more open and transparent search experiments. Perhaps the EU or France will succeed. I know that in Europe, there's an attempt to build a Europe-wide search engine that is more transparent and answerable to public interest than the private search engines out there. And in Europe, this is a much more trenchant problem for a couple of reasons. One, the sort of cultural paranoia about, big American companies, but also the fact that, perversely, Google is significantly more powerful in Europe than it is in North America. In most of Western Europe, Google controls more than 90% of the market. And in places like Portugal and the Netherlands, it's more than 96% of the search market. And that's an odd situation. The United States has never really embraced Google beyond 70%, to my knowledge. So, for reasons I've never been able to figure out, Google is much more popular in Europe and yet held under a much higher level of suspicion. In short, I don't think search neutrality is either a term or a concept that can start a good interrogation. I do think search transparency may be more fruitful. But I think ultimately we are going to face an almost insurmountable conflict between the needs and expectations of a vibrant private sector and the needs and expectations of a vibrant public sector. And I think one of the lessons we're learning here is that for too long we have assumed that what the private sector, the vibrant private sector, can supply for us in this realm can satisfy our public needs. And I think it's pretty clear that that's not going to be the case very long.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.